Yasodhanandana Vajjana Ranjana Yasodhanandana Vajjana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Krishna Book Reading for Janmashtami Ki Jai. Go Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're going to be reading from the Krishna book. It's chapter 1. This is a reading. It's not a class. So, pretty much I'm just going to be reading. I'm going to read the first paragraph of the advent of Lord Krishna. It's not on the board. And then I'm going to read something, some background information that will help us better understand what's being said in that first paragraph and what's happening in this first chapter in general. Okay, so chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna. Once the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of different kings who were actually demons but were posing themselves as the royal order. At that time, the whole world became perturbed, and the predominating deity of this earth, known as Bhumi, went to see Lord Brahma to tell of her calamities due to the demoniac kings. Bhumi assumed the shape of a cow and presented herself before Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes. She was bereaved and was weeping just to invoke the Lord's compassion. She related the calamitous position of the earth, and after hearing this, Lord Brahma became much aggrieved, and he at once started for the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu resides. Lord Brahma was accompanied by all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and Bhumi also followed. Arriving on the shore of the milk ocean, Lord Brahma began to pacify Lord Vishnu, who had formerly saved the earthly planet by assuming the transcendental form of a boar. So now I'm going to read something from this book, Alien Identities, which was written by Sataputta Prabhu. And there's a section in here which is called the Plot of the Mahabharata, where he quotes from the Mahabharata. And the section that he quotes gives a lot of additional insight into what I just read. So this now is the sage Vaisampayana speaking to King Janamejaya. And it says, O best of monarchs, just as humankind was flourishing, powerful, and demoniac creatures began to take birth from the wives of earthly kings. Once the godly Adityas, who administer the universe, fought their wicked cousins, the Daityas, and vanquished them. Bereft of their power and positions, the Daityas began to take birth on this planet, having carefully calculated that they could easily become the gods of the earth, bringing it under their demonic rule. And thus it happened, O Mighty One, that the Asuras began to appear among different creatures and communities. Now this is Sataputta's comment. He says, the technique adopted by the invading forces was to enter in their subtle bodies into the wombs of the wives of kings and thereby take birth in royal families. In this way, they seized control of earthly governments and were able to exploit the earth as they liked. Back to the Mahabharata. As these demonic creatures continued to take birth on the earth, the earth herself could not bear the weight of their presence. Having fallen from their positions in the higher planets, the sons of Diti and Danu thus appeared in this world as monarchs, endowed with great strength and in many other forms. They were bold and haughty, and they virtually surrounded the water-bounded earth, ready to crush those who would oppose them. They harassed the teachers, rulers, merchants, and workers of the earth, and all other creatures. Moving about by the hundreds and thousands, they began to slay the earth's creatures, and they brought terror to the world. Unconcerned with godly culture, with the godly culture of the Brahmanas, they threatened the sages who sat peacefully in their forest ashrams, for the so-called kings were maddened by the strength of their bodies. And this is, once again, Sariputta's comment. He says, in response to this invasion, Bhumi, the earth goddess, approached Lord Brahma and asked him to save the earth, which is what we just heard. Brahma responded by ordering the devas to incarnate on earth just as the asuras had done. Quote, in order to remove the burden of the earth, each of you is to take birth on the earth through your empowered expansions to stop the spread of the demonic forces. End quote. Brahma also requested Lord Vishnu to appear on the earth as an avatar to oppose the demonic forces, and he agreed to do so. In due course of time, various devas appeared on the earth, either by entering personally into the wombs of earthly mothers or by impregnating earthly women and producing offspring that partook of their own nature, the Pandavas, for example. Then Lord Vishnu appeared as Krishna, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. With the aid of the incarnate devas, Krishna gradually annihilated the forces of the Danavas. This involved many complex developments, and one of them, the fratricidal struggle between the Pandavas and the son of Dhritarashtra, the sons of Dhritarashtra, is the main subject of the Mahabharata. In this struggle, the celestial war between the Devas and the Asuras was reenacted on the earth, and by Krishna's arrangement, the forces of the Asuras were eventually defeated. So, hope that threw a bit more light on the subject. So, reading on. In the Vedic mantras, there is a particular type of prayer called Purusha Shukta. Generally, the demigods offer their obeisances unto Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by chanting the Purusha Shukta. It is understood herein that the predominating deity of every planet can see the Supreme Lord of this universe, Brahma, whenever there is some disturbance on his planet. And Brahma can approach the Supreme Lord Vishnu not by seeing him directly, but by standing on the shore of the ocean of milk. There is a planet within this universe called Svetadvip, and on that planet there is an ocean of milk. It is understood from various Vedic literatures that just as there is an ocean of salt water on this planet, there are various kinds of oceans on other planets. Somewhere there is an ocean of milk, somewhere there is an ocean of oil, somewhere there are oceans of liquor and many other types of liquids. The Purusha Shukta is the standard prayer which the demigods recite to appease the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shri Radakshaya Vishnu. Because he is lying on the ocean of milk, he is called Shri Radakshaya Vishnu. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead through whom all the incarnations within this universe appear. After all the demigods offered the Purusha Shukta prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they apparently heard no response. Then Lord Brahma personally sat in meditation, and there was a message transmission from Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Brahma then broadcast the message to the demigods. That is the system of receiving Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is received first by Brahma from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the heart. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Rida Yad Adi Kavaye, the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas was transmitted to Lord Brahma through the heart. Here also, in the same way, only Brahma could understand the message transmitted by Vishnu, and he broadcast it to the demigods for their immediate action. The message was this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear on the earth very soon, along with his supreme powerful potencies. And so long as he remained on the earth planet to execute his mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees, the demigods should also remain there to assist him. they should all immediately take birth in the family of the outer dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Krishna, would personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. Before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. The exact word used here is tat priyartam, which means the demigods should appear on the earth in order to please the Lord. In other words, any living entity who lives only to satisfy the Lord is a demigod. The demigods were further informed that the plenary portion of Lord Krishna, Ananta, who is maintaining the universal planets by extending his millions of hoods, would also appear on earth before Lord Krishna's appearance. They were also informed that the external potency of Vishnu, Maya, with whom all the conditioned souls are enamored, would appear by the order of the Supreme Lord just to execute his purpose. After instructing and pacifying all the demigods, as well as Bhumi with sweet words, Lord Brahma, the father of all Prajapatis, or progenitors of universal population, departed for his abode, the highest material planet called Brahmaloka. The leader of the Yadu dynasty, King Shurasena, was ruling over the country known as Mathura, wherein lies the city of Mathura, as well as the district known as Shurasena, which was named after him. On account of the rule of King Shurasena, Mathura became the capital city of all the kings of the Yadus. Mathura was also made the capital of the kings of the Yadu dynasty because the Yadus were a very pious family and knew that Mathura is the place where Lord Sri Krishna lives eternally, just as he also lives in Dwarka. Once upon a time, Vasudeva, the son of Shurasena, just after marrying Devaki, was going home on his chariot with his newly wedded wife. The father of Devaki, known as Devaka, had contributed a sufficient dowry because he was very affectionate towards his daughter. He had contributed hundreds of chariots completely decorated with gold equipment. At that time, Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki, had voluntarily taken the reins of the horses of Vasudeva's chariot and was driving. According to the custom of the Vedic civilization, when a girl is married, the brother takes the sister and brother-in-law to their home. Because the newly married girl may feel too much separation from her father's family, the brother goes with her until she reaches her father-in-law's house. The full dowry contributed by Devaka was as follows: 400 elephants fully decorated with golden garlands, 15,000 decorated horses, 1,800 chariots. He also arranged for 200 beautiful girls to follow his daughter. The Kshatriya system of marriage still current in India dictates that when a Kshatriya is married, a few dozen of the bride's young girlfriends, in addition to the bride, go to the house of the king. The followers of the queen are called maidservants, but actually they act as friends of the queen. This practice is prevalent from time immemorial, traceable at least to the time before the advent of Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. So Vasudeva brought home another 200 beautiful girls along with his wife Devaki. While the bride and bridegroom were passing along on the chariot, there were different kinds of musical instruments playing to indicate the auspicious moment. There were conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums. Combined together, they were vibrating a nice concert. The procession was very pleasing. The procession was passing very pleasingly, and Kamsa was driving the chariot, when suddenly there was a miraculous sound vibrated from the sky, which especially announced to Kamsa, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are driving the chariot of your sister and your brother-in-law, but you do not know that the eighth child of this sister will kill you." Kamsa was the son of Ugrasena of the Bhoja dynasty. It is said that Kamsa was the most demoniac of all the Bhoja dynasty kings. Immediately after hearing the prophecy from the sky, he caught hold of Devaki's hair and was just about to kill her with his sword. Vasudev was astonished at Kamsa's behavior, and in order to pacify the cruel, shameless brother-in-law, he began to speak as follows. With great reason and evidence, he said, "My dear brother-in-law Kamsa, you are the most famous king of the Bhoja dynasty, and people know that you are the greatest warrior and a valiant king. How is it that you are so infuriated that you are prepared to kill a woman who is your own sister at this auspicious time of her marriage? Why should you be so much afraid of death? Death is already born along with your birth. From the very day you took your birth, you began to die. Suppose you are 25 years old. That means you have already died 25 years. Every moment, every second, you are dying. Why then should you be so much afraid of death? Final death is inevitable. You may die either today or in 100 years. You cannot avoid death. Why should you be so much afraid? Actually, death means annihilation of the present body. As soon as the present body stops functioning and mixes with the five elements of material nature, the living entity within the body accepts another body according to his present action and reaction. According to his present action and reaction. It is just like when a man walks on the street. He puts forward his foot, and when he is confident that his foot is situated on sound ground, he lifts the other foot. In this way, one after another, the bodies change and the soul transmigrates. See how the plant worms change from one twig to another so carefully. Similarly, the living entity changes his body as soon as the higher authorities decide on his next body. As long as the living entity is conditioned within this material world, he must take material bodies one after another. His next particular body is offered by the laws of nature according to the actions and reactions of this life. So Vasudev continues here. This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold. We have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain by combining the two ideas. Sometimes in dreams, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky, and at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we make contact with so many new kinds of bodies, but when we are awake, we forget them all. And actually, these material bodies are creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our present bodies. The nature of the mind is flickering. Sometimes it accepts something and immediately it rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of sense gratification: form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the objects of sense gratification, and when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body is an offering by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts the body and comes out again into the material world to enjoy or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot enjoy or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from the previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. Vasudev continues, "The luminous planets like the sun, moon, or stars reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs, like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon is on the water, and the moving water makes the moon also appear to be moving. But actually, the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enchanted by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose a living entity is now in a human form of body. He thinks that he belongs to the human community, or a particular country, or a particular place. He identifies himself in that way and unnecessarily prepares for another body, which is not required by him. Such desires and mental concoctions are the cause of different types of bodies. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the dictation of your mind and body. Vasudeva thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear, both in this world and in the next. When one is before Yamaraj, the Lord of punishment after death, One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear, both in this world and in the next. When one is before Yamaraj, the Lord of punishment after death. Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at an auspicious moment at the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. This is Vasudeva speaking. The position is so delicate, Vasudeva reasoned, that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation. In this way, Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction, as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac associations, he was a demon, although born in a very high royal family. A demon never cares for any good instruction. He is just like a determined thief. One can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigod and demon. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their lives in that way are called demigods, and those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing in his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he could protect his wife, Devaki. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try to his best to execute his duties, but if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. Vasudeva thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, somewhere or other, let me save the life of Devaki. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body. This is Prabhupada speaking again. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there is a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches another by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful in the matter of executing his duties, but it is still very difficult for him to know what type of body he's going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bharat was very faithfully executing the duties of self-realization, but by chance he developed temporary affection for a deer, and in his next life he had to accept the body of a deer. Vasudeva, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect, although Kamsa was the most sinful man. Sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudeva has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. That is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudeva was deeply aggrieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudeva said to Kamsa, My dear brother-in-law, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You are awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky, but the danger is to come from the sons of your sister, who are not present now. And who knows, there may or may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present, nor is there cause for fear from your sister. If there are any sons born to her, I promise that I shall present all of them to you for necessary action. Kamsa knew the value of Vasudeva's word of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. For the time being, he desisted from the heinous killing of his sister. Thus, Vasudeva was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki gave birth to a child. Thus, she gave birth to 8 male children as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudeva kept his word of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudeva was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this fame. Although it was very painful for Vasudeva to hand over this newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him, but he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudeva. This event is very exemplary. For a great soul like Vasudeva, there is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudeva carries out his duties without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. And a heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way. But a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudeva. He was surprised to see Vasudeva keeping his promise, and being compassionate upon him and pleased, he began to speak as follows. My dear Vasudeva, you need not present this child to me. I am not in danger from this child. I have heard that the 8th child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You can take him back. When Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was very pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician Chanaka Pandit said, "Never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman." Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudeva and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, personalities like Nanda Maharaj and all the other cowherd men and their wives, and on the other side, Vasudeva, his father Surasena and all his relatives born in the family of Vishnu of the Yadu dynasty, along with all their friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. Narada warned Kamsa to be very careful of them. Since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons, period. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became very much alarmed. He understood that since the demigods had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law Vasudeva and Devaki and put them behind bars. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year, and Kamsa, thinking each one of the babies to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. He was particularly afraid of the 8th child, but after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth from Devaki and Vasudeva. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. There are many instances in the history of the world of persons in the royal order who have killed their father, brother, or whole family and friends for the satisfaction of their ambitions. There is nothing astonishing about this. For members of the demoniac, greedy royal order can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth he had been a demon of the name Kalanimi and had been killed by Vishnu. Having now taken his birth in the Bhoja family, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family, and Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Krishna, just as he had been killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, because he was the chief among the Yadus. The chief among the Yadu, Bhoja, and Anhaka dynasties. He also occupied the kingdom of Shurasena, Vasudeva's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, the advent of Lord Krishna. Anybody have any question or comment? Yeah.
Thank you, Brigapati Prabhu. In your class, you're talking a lot about different, like demons taking birth, that they were ordered to take birth amongst, that the demigods were taking on bodies, and that demons were taking on bodies and setting up this planet as a battleground. And I was, I've been thinking a bit about, because I heard some things about, you know, like there's a lot of creation of bodies in this time, you know, like they're cloning bodies and also creating robotics which are work like bodies, and with all the AI, I was just wondering what's the possibility of the demons being able to utilize this for their continual goal of dominating the universe.
Well, I think it's a possibility. Prabhupada said in a lecture he gave in New York and on the Bhagavad Gita in 1966, which was later transcribed and became the book Rajavija, King of Knowledge, page 57. He said, this material world is managed by rakshasas, man-eating demons who will crush their own sons for the satisfaction of their senses. So Prabhupada said that. So, you know, it's possibly already going on that demons are in control of the world. And that's why we see what we see, you know, what we see going on. So, yeah, it's already happening, and I think they could make use of those things to make it even further happen. Anybody else like to add something to that? Or Maharaj? Anybody? No? Anybody else have any comment or question? Yep. The mother of Devaki.
I don't understand how Devaki and Kamsa are brother and sister, because it's said that unless Ugrasena and Devaka are the same person, because it's said that she's the son of Devaka and he's the son of Ugrasena. How are they brother and sister?
Yeah, I used to know the answer to that question. I can't remember anymore. They're like cousin brothers, cousin brother sister. They're not like, you know, the same father. Does anybody remember exactly what the connection is? Cousins, yeah, cousins. So, right, yeah. So does that mean Ugrasena and Devaka were brothers? Is that the idea? Or anyway, there's some relationship there among the parents, and they're cousins, actually. Just like sometimes you even hear the phrase cousin brother. Prabhupada would say that sometimes, in referring to like Lord Krishna and Arjuna, cousin brothers. And so I think that's the idea. Anybody else? Anything? Okay, thank you very much. Oh.
Some of the Hindu families that if a boy and a girl, or a girl and a girl, are in the same family, very often they're considered like brothers and sisters, even though they're not by birth brothers and sisters. Very often a brother will call the woman his sister when they're actually not real sisters. So it's traditional and commonplace for that to happen.
Krishna book ki jai, jai master.